it's the biggest shake-up of primary school education in a generation. For the first time, children in fifth and sixth class in our primary schools are going to be taught about sexual orientation. They'll also start learning about puberty earlier with a new emphasis on consent, but there'll be no mention of gender identity. Schools are also still free to shape the lessons according to their ethos. So is this the comprehensive update that our kids need? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. So technically, for the last 26 years, the curriculum in this area has stood still. It hasn't changed. But I think it is fair to say that lots of schools and lots of teachers have been progressive and have changed the way they are teaching sex education to reflect that the world that our children are living in has utterly changed. Kids are hitting puberty earlier. They're encountering the internet, social media, even pornography, long before their parents or their teachers might think that they're ready. And let's face it, there are lots of toxic voices online, and sometimes they're louder than the healthy, informed ones. So how far does this new curriculum go in preparing our children and talking to our children about the realities of changing bodies, of sex and identity, and our parents and teachers ready for these new conversations? Well, callers to Lunchtime Live yesterday gave these changes a mixed welcome.
You know, I do think it is important that schools play a vital role in this, because they can give the children the factual information. And also, some children might not always feel comfortable discussing these things at home, but, you know, with a trusted adult in the school, they in the classroom setting, they might discuss maybe some concerns or questions they have.
So I am completely in favour of fact-based comprehensive sex education. That's very different from comprehensive sexuality education. But parents have to remember that they ultimately have the constitutionally protected right to be the primary educator of their children.
We also sent our reporter, Joss Crosby, out onto the streets with his microphone to talk to the good people of Cork about sex education in schools.
Oh yes, absolutely, go for it. I mean, kids are vaping, they're taking drugs, they're going to rave parties at the age of 11, they get sneaked in, you know. Now, what's wrong with giving them sex education? At the end of the day, you know, we're human beings, aren't we?
Leave the mother and father to it, I'd say. That's what I think anyway, but yeah. Everyone's different, I suppose, as well. So everyone will learn different times, different ways.
I was definitely in sixth class when we did our first kind of, and I was in all girls school at the time, like kind of like, what's going to happen with your bodies and all that kind of stuff. I actually think it was a really good time to learn, and I don't see if it's before that it's too early. Like, when can it be too early? They're important things to learn.
When's the best time to start talking about the birds and the bees?
Oh, I said the secondary, I said. Bit too young yet.
But I suppose they're already having the conversations maybe down the back of the class anyway.
Oh, yeah, well, should we all done that? But I would say secondary, you know.
I remember my daughter came home from school one time and she was showing me that the teacher showed her like two Barbies, and sometimes there are two female Barbies and stuff like that, and she had a lot of questions about that. So, I mean, somebody professional and somebody trained, you know, to talk to them, maybe somebody that won't make them laugh or giddy, somebody that will make it sink in, I don't know. Like,
how did you find that conversation when she came home?
It was hilarious. Then I just started playing Sex in the City, and that taught her everything she needed to know. I'd like leave the room and just leave it on. So that was my parenting. So who am I to give advice to anybody?
All right, each to their own. To discuss all of these issues, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Elaine Burns from the School of Psychology in Dublin City University. And you might remember that a few years ago, Elaine worked with Richie Sadlier on a special online sex education course for teenagers. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Elaine.
Thank you, Ciara.
So this has been a long time in the making. I know I have discussed this as a journalist time and time again. It has been controversial, to say the least. But is it fair to say that, you know, the teachings that I got 26 years ago, maybe a little bit more, haven't moved on, haven't developed much since then?
I think we've seen huge developments since then, Ciara, to be fair.
the efforts being made both at second level and now at primary level to better prepare students for the realities of relationships, of understanding and embracing their own sexuality, of the challenges and the dangers that they may face in the world and online. I mean, 26 years ago, we just about had the internet then. So I think there have been huge strides, and certainly with the developments announced by the Minister for Education, embracing relationships and sexuality education at primary school level, that is most welcome. However, I would have some concerns at this stage, but it is a positive development.
So for people who maybe are listening to this podcast this morning and didn't hear the conversations on the radio yesterday about this new curriculum, what exactly are we going to be teaching our children in primary school about sex and their bodies and their sexual orientation?
There are three main strands to the well-being module that's being rolled out at primary level that particularly relate to gender and sexuality, and that is sexual orientation, consent, and gender stereotypes. So those three aspects are going to be explored from third class at primary level. Now, I suppose one could argue when we look at puberty can happen or is starting for young girls between the ages of 8 and 13. It may be a little bit too late to be discussing issues related to puberty or preparing students for issues related to puberty from third class when they could be experiencing it 2 years earlier. That would be a concern that I'd have when it comes to discussing puberty. Certainly, it is very welcome that sexual orientation, when this can be something that people are exploring or experiencing, they don't know what they're experiencing from quite a young age, their orientation and their attraction, and teasing that out for themselves. And then, of course, my own hobby horse, consent, and introducing the communication of consent at this stage and understanding what it means in preparation for maybe the next stage of development, moving into adolescence.
What is the benefit, do you see, Elaine, in giving them the language and understanding of their bodies and sex?
Oh, it cannot be overstated, the importance of, number one, their comfort, Kira, in the language, their comfort in discussing issues related to sex and sexuality, their comfort in discussing issues related to sexual orientation. And I think one of the very, very important strands in this is gender stereotypes, in understanding what gender stereotypes are, in addressing these, in being comfortable in addressing them. And that was one of, you referred to the module that Richie and I delivered at his alma mater at second level with Transition Your Boys. And that was one of the most powerful modules that we worked on, was addressing gendered stereotypes, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, respect, that core concept when it comes to consent, respect for myself and respect for others.
Because the changes will introduce primary school pupils to the concept of consent from third class, but not in a sexual context. It's broader than that.
That's very, very important, particularly when we look at sexual consent and talking about that and discussing that more openly and more broadly at second level. I think introducing the concept of consent as being respect for myself and respect for others, and understanding the importance of protecting myself and protecting others at this stage, I think is very, very important as one of the building blocks of consent. So that by the time students get to explore, well, what does it mean in a sexual context, that they are already very, very familiar with the fact, the embeddedness of respect for myself and for others at primary level.
So for you, learning about personal boundaries at a very young age then makes it much easier to talk about sexual consent later on.
I think so. I think embedding those building blocks, like at its core, consent has respect. Consent is about respect. Consent is about expression, self-expressing what I want, interpreting what somebody else is expressing they want or don't want, equally as importantly. And I think building on that throughout primary level, embedding it so that by the time students get to discussing something like sexual consent, they are in absolutely no doubt about the centrality
of respect and the centrality of communication, both interpreting what is being communicated to us and communicating in a way that is empowering for us what we want and what we need ourselves.
But the truth is, Elaine, if you have a child, if you have a 5, 6, 7-year-old in a school, particularly in a mixed school, as a parent, you're actually having that conversation already, because you know what? When they head out into the yard, they're playing kiss chase just like we did in 1986 down in Letterkenny. And I have found as a parent, you're actually having this conversation much earlier anyhow. So it would be helpful, I think, if there was some guidance about how you navigate that conversation a little bit earlier.
I do agree with you there. And that's why, you know, in my opinion, these conversations should be starting at Montessori. But you know something, Kira, going back to third class now, like this has been 26 years in the making. I think that the announcement is a good starting point for primary level. However, of course, we would want to see these concepts being introduced earlier. And I would hope that when we see the success, when we see how students are adapting to this new curriculum, that it would be easier to roll back and go, you know what, I think we could introduce this at an appropriate level for junior infants, senior infants, and then build up to where we are now with from third class.
It's the same, I think, when it comes to sexual identity. I think the truth is that there's a lot of 5 and 6 and 7-year-olds out there who have somebody in their family. It might be a parent, it might be an older sibling, it might be an aunt or an uncle who isn't heterosexual, who isn't in a heterosexual relationship. And they're actually kind of exposed to that a lot earlier too. They've grown up with it.
Yeah, there is that, and with the gender identity conversation. Now, we do have sexual orientation being addressed, and that's very, very welcome. I think the gender identity conversation is somewhat more complex and has the potential to be more complex and absolutely should be explored and should be discussed. However, perhaps sexual orientation, I think, is probably sufficient for children in single digits.
You are teaching things in primary school now along the lines of sexual orientation, aren't you? Heterosexuality, homosexuality, bisexuality. Gender identity has been left off the curriculum. Is there a reason for that?
So gender identity is not there, but what we are, and again, this is having consulted and engaged and gone through quite a lengthy process, what we are doing is making sure that when children are in fifth and sixth class, when they're, you know, as I said, they've gone through puberty, many of them, and they're going into secondary school, that they understand what attraction is, that they understand what it might mean for them, what it might mean for somebody else, and that we're not ignoring this topic. It's really important that we're not ignoring something that we know young people are going through, and that we're doing so at a stage.
I see that the sexuality piece is in there and sexual orientation is in there, but I'm asking you specifically about gender identity and gender ideology. There was a suggestion that that was going to be in there.
Again, this has happened through engagement and consultation. It's not part of the curriculum. It's not there. It's not included in it. We know, obviously, from first year onwards, once children go into post-primary school, that's more of a focus and more part of the overall discussion with young people. But the focus here and the emphasis is on sexual orientation.
Yeah, so what has been, I suppose, taught here, as you say, is sexual identity, but not gender identity. And that has been, hasn't it, Elaine, extremely contentious over the years. And the decision now by the department is to leave that for primary school children. And it's something that they're going to address perhaps in secondary school.
I think that is a good decision. It won't be a decision that everybody agrees with. And I understand that. However, we're dealing with children like who are, you know, 8, 9 years old. There's time enough for that kind of debate and that kind of teasing out these issues that are far more complex than I think 8 and 9-year-olds should probably be being exposed to in conversations at school. I think giving them, equipping them with the tools that the curriculum has outlined will be sufficient at primary level. And I think we're looking at areas like that we'd never looked at before. For example, looking at sexuality, sexual orientation, consent, from the perspective of rights and fairness, from the perspective of family. Identity is included, but not specifically gender identity, the impact on relationships. And also something that I think is really important is looking at it from the perspective of digital media well-being from that perspective as well. So there has been, I think, a lot of thought put into this curriculum. One of the things that I think we need to work further on, Kira, is more of a collaborative approach, I think, between schools and parents in how this is supported at home. So students will be exploring this in well-being at school. I think we could really, really embed it and really build on what they're learning at school if we introduce a very strong and coherent collaborative approach with parents.
And I do think a lot of parents would really appreciate that. But we do also have to acknowledge, Elaine, that there is a lot of parents out there who are uncomfortable at the idea that these issues are being taught or discussed outside of the home.
I agree with you there. And that's where, again, I think it's so important for schools and parents to have this open communication challenge. I think before something like this is introduced in schools, that there is, for example, an information evening with parents so that they're fully aware and fully on board. I know there is an information pack for them on the new curriculum, but certainly I think being able to be in a space with fellow parents and with the teachers who are going to be delivering the program, to be able to have a full and frank and open conversation about that as an entity, parents and teachers together. And for parents to understand that where this curriculum is coming from is a good place. It is only going to be beneficial. But again, I do think that open, bi-directional communication is going to be so important in really, really embedding it and really making like a whole of school and home approach to this.
What about teachers in all of this, Elaine? I mean, are they ready and able and totally comfortable to have these conversations with their pupils? And if they're not, what options do they have?
And I think that's one of the very great challenges for teachers. I suppose with any change in the curriculum, it's always going to be a challenge. And there's a learning curve and a learning process involved in it. And one would hope that teachers who are delivering wellbeing, for example, are fully invested, and this is something that, you know, it's not something that's being foisted upon them.
There is a question around a school that has a particular ethos and what freedom they will have in terms of the implementation of these policies. What do we know about that, Elaine?
That's always a concern, Kira, and the minister reiterated that again, that the ethos of the school will be respected in this process. For me, personally, I think education around sexuality, around consent, around gender and challenging stereotypes transcends ethos or should transcend ethos. These are vitally, vitally important issues that students should not just be learning about, but should be discussing, should be engaging with, should be debating, should be talking among themselves in a safe space. And where is safer for them really to collectively discuss and explore and examine and tease out these issues and what they mean for them and for each other than in a school setting. So that would be a concern, and we'll see how that plays out, where ethos, the extent to which ethos may limit how comprehensively the curriculum can be delivered.
All right, Elaine Burns, thanks so much for your time today and for joining us here on News Talk Daily. We'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on this, folks. Do get in touch. You can always get me on Instagram at @officialKiraD. Well, that's it from me today. Thank you, as always, for your company. Don't forget, you'll always get more information and links and contact details in our show notes. They're all there on the website, newstalk.com, or on the Go Loud player. Until tomorrow morning, from me, Kira Doherty. Goodbye.